The most direct, elementary, and typical expression of the present stage of capitalist policy is the organized collective destruction of wealth and of the productive forces. The purposeful destruction of commodities for economic reasons is in itself nothing new in capitalism, but an integral part of its daily working from the beginning. It was in 1799 that Fourier first became convinced of the necessity of a new form of social organization when he found himself entrusted with the task at Marseille to superintend the destruction of a quantity of rice held for higher prices during a scarcity of food till it had become unfit for use. Nevertheless, this rice had at any rate been held back in the hope of sale, and was only destroyed because it had become unfit for use. This was not yet the modern principle, the wholesale destruction of good rice, good wheat, good cotton, good coffee, and good meat. In the same way, the endeavor by combination to limit stocks, restrict production, and maintain or raise prices is inherent not merely in capitalism, but in commodity economy from the beginning. As Adam Smith wrote in his Wealth of Nations, quote, "People of the same trade seldom meet together, even for merriment and diversion. But the conversation ends in a conspiracy against the public or in some contrivance to raise prices," unquote. But such a policy appeared to Adam Smith, the original voice of classic capitalism, as an offense against the principles of capitalist production, as, quote, "a conspiracy against the public," unquote. It has remained for our day that all the capitalist governments of the world should meet together in the World Economic Conference to proclaim, with the combined voice of all the most enlightened, progressive statesmen and all the economists, the supreme aim to restrict production and to raise prices. This is a measure of the extreme stage of decay of capitalism. A comment here in general about representatives of classic capitalism or people who today consider themselves some kind of paleoconservative standing up for old-style capitalism and that present-day decayed imperialism is a conspiracy against them, etc. You hear this a lot from libertarians. It's really important to know and to point out when you hear comments like this that this is just simply how capitalism develops, as Dutt is showing in this book. Continuing, the distinctive modern stage of capitalist policy for the destruction of wealth and of the productive forces is marked by three outstanding characteristics. The first is the gigantic scale of destruction conducted over entire principal world areas of production and calculated in relation to world stocks. The second is the direct government organization and subsiding of such destruction and restriction of production by all the leading imperialist governments. The third is the extension of destruction not only to the destruction of existing stocks of commodities, but to the destruction of the productive forces, the plowing up of crops and sown areas, the artificial limitation of production, the dismantling of machinery, as well as holding unused the labor power of millions of workers. The examples of this process throughout the capitalist world are too familiar to require repetition. The burning of millions of bags of coffee or tons of grain in the midst of mass starvation and poverty have horrified the world, but all this has been no accidental or exceptional happening through the action of individuals, but on the contrary, it was directly organized by all the capitalist governments of the world, and in the forefront, by the most, quote, progressive governments, by the Roosevelt government in the United States, by social democratic governments, etc. Quoting the News Chronicle, October 17, 1933, it is a tragic irony that men and women in New York should be suffering the tortures of hunger while tens of thousands of pigs in Faro are being slaughtered in Iowa by the command of the government, and farmers in Kansas or Nebraska are burning their grain, unquote. The expenditures account recently published of the Agricultural Adjustment Administration under the Roosevelt regime affords a pretty picture of modern capitalism. Quoting The Economist, December 30, 1933, we see expenditures under the AAA of $110 million of cotton acreage plowed up, $150 million of cotton acreage reduced in 1934, $33 million of emergency pig sow slaughter, $350 million of corn hog production control, $102 million of wheat acreage reduction, and $21 million of tobacco acreage reduction. This inspiring combination of mammon and juggernaut, let it be remembered, is the worshipped idol of the Labor Party and of the Trades Union Congress, as proclaimed at their meetings at Hastings and Brighton in 1933. From Denmark, it was reported in November 1933 that cattle were being slaughtered in the government abattoirs at the rate of 5,000 a week for the carcasses to be burnt in the incinerators. The government established a special destruction fund, but so great was the cost of destruction that Parliament had to be approached for further credits for the construction of new slaughterhouses. This was under a social democratic government. In the same way, the British Labour government had already carried the Coal Mines Act for the limitation of the output of coal, with such success that in the beginning of 1934, a London firm actually ordered a consignment of coal from abroad on the grounds, as they stated, that owing to the limitation schemes, it was impossible to secure delivery from British sources with sufficient speed. In Britain in 1930, the company National Shipbuilders Security Limited was formed, with power to borrow up to £3 million for the purpose, according to the Memorandum of Association, quote, to assist the shipbuilding industry by the purchase of redundant and/or obsolete shipyards, the dismantling and disposal of their contents, and the resale of their sites under restrictions against further use for shipbuilding, unquote. Within a few months, its successful activities were reported in the press, quote, National Shipbuilders Security Limited has purchased Dalmere Shipbuilding Yard, owned by William Beardmore and Company. In a consequence, it is to be closed down by the end of the year. This shipyard was one of the largest on the Clyde, employing 6,000 men during the war. Negotiations for the purchase and closing down of other shipyards are in progress, unquote. Up to the end of 1933, this new type of capitalist economy had bought up and closed down 100 shipbuilding berths. In the 12 months to June 1933, the world tonnage of merchant shipping showed a net decrease of 1.8 million tons, more than half this decrease being in tonnage owned by Britain. Similarly, in the woolen textile industry, the Woolcombers Mutual Association Limited was formed early in 1933, quote, to assist the woolcombing industry by the purchase and dismantling of redundant and obsolete mills, plant, and machinery for resale under restrictive covenants against their further use for woolcombing, unquote. The principal copper producers of the world entered into an agreement at Brussels in December 1931 to limit production during 1932 to 26% of the capacity of their mines. The National Coffee Council of Brazil, from which country comes 2/3 of the world's coffee, decided in December 1931 to destroy 12 million bags of coffee. During 1932-3, 9.6 million quintals, equivalent to 1,248 million pounds weight, were destroyed, an emergency tax being imposed on coffee exports to finance the purchase and destruction of surplus coffee. Up to the end of 1933, no fewer than 22 million bags of coffee had been disposed of by burning or dumping in the sea. The governors of Texas and Oklahoma called out the National Guard to take possession of the oil wells and prevent production. The United States Department of Agriculture in the summer of 1933 announced bounties of $7 to $20 per acre to farmers for the destruction of the cotton crop. This was successful in securing the plowing in or mowing down of 11 million acres out of a total of 40 million. Quoting the World Economic Survey, the government hoped to take 10 million acres out of production by paying growers $7 to $20 per acre, according to the yield of their land, for plowing under or mowing down cotton already growing. The scheme was immediately successful in restricting acreage, over 11 million acres being plowed in or mown down, reducing the estimated acreage from 40.8 to 29.7 million acres, unquote. To the modern bourgeois mind and outlook, this process of wholesale destruction and restricting of production in the midst of poverty appears as a natural and self-evident necessity. Without sense of contradiction, they proclaim it in the same breath that they proclaim the necessity of, quote, economy and, quote, cuts, or today, austerity to the masses, and correctly, they feel no contradiction since both are indispensable to the maintenance of capitalism at the present stage. They preach today the policy of restriction of production with the same sense of obvious correctness and common sense with which they preached after the war the policy of, quote, increased production as the path to prosperity. Thus, in the summer of 1933, we find the British Chancellor of the Exchequer answering the, quote, theorists who imagine restriction of production to be, quote, a bad thing. Quoting Neville Chamberlain in the House of Commons, June 2, 1933, to allow production to go on unchecked and unregulated in these modern conditions, when it could almost at a moment's notice be increased to an almost indefinite extent, was absolute folly, unquote. In the same way, The Economist was able to report with satisfaction, quote, while there was an enormous overexpansion of productive capacity before 1929, investment in capital equipment has been severely curtailed since then, and a substantial proportion of existing plant and machinery has become obsolete or has been scrapped. There can be little doubt that substantial progress has already been made in the readjustment of productive capacity to the lower level of demand for consumers' goods, unquote. So productive capacity must be, quote, readjusted to the, quote, lower level of consumption of the impoverished masses, such as the bet of Procrustes, who was also a bandit but a less skilled and large-scale bandit, to which modern capitalism, in its extreme stage of decay, seeks to fit the tortured body of humanity. The more obvious and glaring expressions of this process, the burning of foodstuffs, the dismantling of machinery that is still in good condition, strike the imagination of all. But all do not yet see the full significance of these symptoms. First, the expression through these symptoms of the extreme stage of decay of the whole capitalist order. Second, the inseparable connection of this process of decay with the social and political phenomena of decay, which find their complete expression in fascism. And third, the necessary completion and final working out of this process in war. For war is only the complete and most systematic working out of the process of destruction. Today, they are burning wheat and grain, the means of human life. Tomorrow, they will be burning living human bodies.